This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Robert Cohen, Director of Government Affairs for the Union of Concerned Scientists Climate and Energy Program. Rob creates and implements legislative campaigns to support UCS efforts on clean energy, global warming, and nuclear safety issues. His work played an important role in the passage by the House of Representatives of the first ever legislation to reduce greenhouse gases and increase deployment of clean energy. Rob Cohen is here today to evaluate the opportunities and challenges of addressing climate change at the federal and state levels following the 2014 midterm election. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Before we go into more detail, would you give an overview of how the environment for addressing global warming has changed at the federal level following the 2014 midterm elections?
Sure. The era of the big comprehensive federal bill has been over for quite some time. That didn't necessarily change with the 2014 elections. The 60-vote hurdles in the Senate and certain other things have really made it hard to pass kind of grand sweeping comprehensive legislation, especially as it relates to climate. But I'd say with respect to the 2014 elections, it got more difficult, obviously, because the Senate has flipped into Republican control and the party platform has traditionally not been really supportive of climate action. And then we have a House of Representatives that's increasingly controlled by a Tea Party faction that seems to be very opposed to climate action. So federal opportunities for legislation following the 2014 elections have gotten a lot more scarce.
Well, you've been alluding to this, but how would you characterize the new senators and representatives that have been elected in regard to their approach to climate change?
There are some positive stories, but primarily most of what we saw with respect to the 2014 elections in the Senate have yielded senators who aren't really supportive of climate action. And in some cases, we're really seeing kind of sweeping 180-degree differences. For example, just looking at the North Carolina Senate race where you had Kay Hagan, who is a very good supporter of renewables and climate action and was unseated by the former Speaker of the Assembly who presided over the State Assembly at the time when they decided to oppose any science research that factored in sea level rise, for example, beyond a certain year into planning for the state. So we've got a sea change, really, of people who are really supportive, wanting to do something about climate, and people who have been largely opposed to it.
What are the key rollback concerns in regard to climate change in the upcoming Congress?
They primarily center on the Clean Air Act. The Clean Air Act has been a really important public health tool with respect to criteria air pollutants historically, and that, of course, has reduced the amount of carbon because it's reduced the amount of fossil energy. However, I'd say with respect to the President's Clean Power Plan and the EPA carbon regs that have been proposed, we now are likely to see more attacks on that come out of the House. And because the Senate is no longer controlled by the Democrats, these bills that the House would largely pass to try to defund the EPA's ability to implement those carbon regs and things of that nature, they will likely get a vote in the Senate now because the agenda is controlled by Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party. So they still need 60 votes to pass things, but at the same time, there's enough Democrats in the Senate that aren't necessarily supportive of action on climate that they could get close to that number. And that means that there's a chance that several bills will get to the president's desk that don't have things in them that we like, essentially things that are attempts to actually roll back some of the great work that the administration has been doing on this. So I would say that's the biggest threat, is really rollback of the EPA's ability to implement and enforce the Clean Air Act regulations, whether they're criteria pollutant regulations or whether they're the EPA carbon power plant regulations.
Is Obama likely to veto legislation of this nature?
I think he is. The president has really put himself out there and really played a leadership role on reducing our heat-trapping gases here in this country. And the Clean Power Plan is really kind of a monumental step in that. And I don't see the president laying down. I see the president meeting the challenges with respect to the opposition as forcefully as he can. On the other hand, when it comes to things like appropriations bills, we're dealing with a lot of different spending priorities across a huge spectrum of issues, not just environmental issues, but everything from health care to other important issues that affect the American public. So when you're talking about some legislation that's in those spending bills that potentially erodes the authority of the EPA or undermines the EPA's ability to enforce the greenhouse gas regulations, the president has to weigh vetoing that with a bunch of other considerations. I think largely the president is going to find himself unwilling to support legislation that kind of rolls back his prime effort right now, second to health care, which would be these greenhouse gas regs. But he can't veto everything that gets to his desk. So we've got a lot of work to do as a community to really build support and push back against the opposition to the EPA's ability to actually enforce these regulations.
What is the overall strategy of UCS and other groups to prevent the rollbacks?
It really starts with building support on the ground in the states. We have got to work with opinion leaders and important constituencies in the states to educate them about the impacts of climate change. People don't want to talk about climate change itself as an ideological issue. They can certainly see the impacts of climate change on the ground in almost every state in the union, and we're attempting to engage folks on those impacts, kind of really educate them as to the science and to the future projections of what those impacts actually mean to their state. And we're talking about economic impacts as well. And then we can begin to have a conversation about preparedness and the need to make climate resilience a national priority in this country, because it just makes good common sense from a financial standpoint, and it protects our citizenry much better. You know, through that conversation, I'm hoping we can get to another conversation about where does that revenue come from. There's actually a real cost to climate change that the general population in states are currently bearing, and we don't have the resources to meet this problem without federal leadership. So, you know, really hoping to engender a conversation that starts from the states about the role that the federal government should play in incentivizing more preparedness and resilience to these climate impacts, and of course leading on reducing our emissions so that we can slow these impacts and reduce the ferocity of these impacts as we move forward into the future. Also, UCS is obviously very, very engaged in the clean energy fights from a clean energy legislation standpoint. We've been really pushing for a national renewable electricity standard for many years. Doesn't look like that has a lot of traction currently on the Hill, but there might be some other opportunities for smaller kind of rifle shot renewables legislation that we're dedicated to moving forward on, certain clean energy finance vehicles and tax incentives, for example.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Robert Cohen, Director of Government Affairs for the Union of Concerned Scientists Climate and Energy Program. Our topic is the opportunities and challenges of addressing climate change at the federal and state levels following the 2014 midterm election. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. You've alluded a bit to this, but what are the potential opportunities available to positively address climate change in the upcoming Congress?
Again, I feel strongly that there's still an opportunity on clean energy for the federal government to incentivize more clean energy deployment. And that's through certain federal financing opportunities, certain tax incentives. There's also, I think, an opportunity to really take a look at the way we're generating electricity in the context of water scarcity, which you're really seeing a serious problem with water scarcity all over the country, but the Southwest and other areas have been very aware of this for a while. And ironically, generating electricity with renewables as opposed to conventional baseload electricity like coal, nuclear, yields less of an impact on water. So by switching to a cleaner energy future, we're reducing our water usage, which of course is becoming increasingly scarce, and the scarcity of water becomes exacerbated due to climate change. So it's kind of a scary cycle there. So I think there's some opportunity maybe at the federal level to help the energy water nexus to incentivize more renewables. And then I think we really need to make preparedness, climate preparedness, a national priority. Communities all around this country are being really devastated by climate impacts, everything from floods associated with steam sea level rise to wildfires. And we really need smart policies and resources to be able to invest in the type of infrastructure and the type of planning that are necessary to safeguard our citizens from these impacts and, quite frankly, protect the livelihoods of these states that are at risk every time there's a serious disaster. I think there's an opportunity to make some progress, even in this environment, on those issues, but I don't think there's much of an opportunity to have some sort of grand comprehensive climate bill.
What are the prospects for increasing energy standards for vehicles further than they have been already?
Actually, the EPA is about to come out with their standards for heavy-duty trucks. that's positive. There's been a lot of progress made on vehicle efficiency. In fact, I'd say, you know, as far as energy and climate issues, that's been the one issue that we've made the most progress on over the last several years. So we're heading in the right direction. We can do more, and we can do more with respect to incentivizing an electrification of our vehicle sector. And I think, you know, Congress has to take a really good look at policies that can help incentivize that. There's bipartisan support for that idea, so there's prospect there. But overall, a lot of the progress has really been made with respect to the executive branch, using executive authority through the agencies, establishing standards and rules through those agencies.
What are the prospects for encouraging energy efficiency?
You know, they should be good, because energy efficiency is obviously a bipartisan issue, and I can't really think of a natural constituency or interest group that would be in opposition to it, other than perhaps utilities that stand to benefit from selling as much energy as possible. But the truth is that there's a lot of support for policies that incentivize energy efficiency on both sides of the aisle. The problem is that any time there seems to be a bill that has bipartisan support, people see an opportunity to tack on other issues that aren't necessarily germane to the issue at hand. And it becomes this kind of ideological war where each party is interested in loading up the legislation with what we call riders or amendments that could be very polarizing. So what we see is what happened earlier with the Shaheen Portman bill, which is an energy efficiency bill. It's not the most aggressive energy efficiency bill in the world, but it's certainly better than the status quo. And we couldn't really even get that out of Congress because it was held hostage essentially to these ideological kind of party debates. So this is very upsetting, because if we can't get a moderate energy efficiency bill out of Congress, the prospects for getting any type of more robust legislation are obviously very dim. My hope is that the 2014 elections will provide a new opportunity for the Congress to actually do their job in a way that actually yields legislation, to go about the business of governing and compromising and not just use legislation in this kind of chess game over party ideology.
Given the newly elected Congress, what are the prospects for a positive U.S. role in upcoming international climate meetings?
Yeah, well, I mean, the president can actually pledge the United States to certain targets, but unless we're able to actually meet those targets, it doesn't really have a lot of substance behind it. The president has been very aggressive in using the executive and his existing authority to do everything that he can to put us on a path to clean energy future, to reduce those harmful climate change heat-trapping gases. However, I would just say that, you know, without action from Congress, we're really going to be limited in terms of how aggressive we could be or how easily we'll be able to meet some of those targets that will be set internationally. And so if you have a more conservative Congress, or a Congress that's more hostile to reducing our emissions or putting a plan in place which does that, it's just going to make it harder for the United States to play the international leadership role. The legislative branch is going to have to act if the United States is really going to be able to make some serious strides reducing its emissions and be able to play that leadership role internationally.
Is there likely to be any progress in the lame duck session on climate change prior to the next Congress?
So there is an incentive for the Republicans to try to get some things done in the lame duck, largely because the House is going to have more Tea Party members after the new year who are very hostile, quite frankly, to any spending at all, and are much more conservative when it comes to an array of policy issues than kind of the standard establishment Republicans are. We've seen that John Boehner has had a very tough time actually controlling his party in the House, given the current makeup. So the new makeup will even be more challenging with respect to that. So things like tax extenders, which is legislation that would extend a lot of the federal tax incentives for a variety of things, everything from things like the medical device tax to the production tax credit for wind, has largely been kind of held hostage. There was a lot of hope that both parties would be able to come together in the lame duck and actually pass a tax extender package out of Congress, which would, of course, bolster the wind energy industry, bolster energy efficiency, and other renewables industries' prospects. And yet, you know, I'm hearing from a lot of sources on the Hill that it just doesn't look like there's much of a chance for that happening. But our job right now is to put as much pressure on Congress as possible to try to get them to actually pass some sort of a tax extenders package out before the lame duck. Short of that, I actually don't see much else being accomplished in the lame duck.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Robert Cohen, Director of Government Affairs for the Union of Concerned Scientists Climate and Energy Program. Our topic is the opportunities and challenges of addressing climate change at the federal and state levels following the 2014 midterm election. How has the overall environment for addressing global warming changed at the state level since the 2014 midterm election?
The national trend was also seen in the states. We had a lot of state legislatures that went more conservative. We had some new governors that were elected that were Democrats, but a lot more that were conservative. So the national trend that we saw on election night, where it was a good night for the Republicans, extended to state elections. And really, a lot of the progress that's been made on clean energy and reducing greenhouse gases has been done at the state level through, you know, regional greenhouse gas trading initiatives or state renewable electricity standards or energy efficiency standards. And there has been a lot of bipartisan support traditionally for those initiatives at the state level, for some initiatives more than others. I'd say that given the fact that we're looking at a lot more conservative state legislatures and state governorships, that progress on climate change in the state certainly wasn't bolstered by the 2014 midterms. That said, I still think the states is really where it's at with respect to progress on climate change and renewables. There's a huge opportunity right now with the Clean Power Plan for states to really comply with those standards in a way that maximizes the renewable output. And so it's really about maximizing the compliance pathways states have to meet that standard, instead of just switching from, for example, coal to gas, to really draw upon the benefits of renewables and energy efficiency as a way for meeting that standard. That all of those decisions are going to happen at the state level. So, you know, state legislatures will play a part, but really it's the court of public opinion in the states that are going to do a lot to affect how these states ultimately comply. And the more they comply using renewables and the more aggressive they are about reducing their greenhouse gas footprints or entering into, you know, regional trading programs, for example, the more progress we'll see. We can't really afford to wait for the federal government to act. We've had really actually the least productive Congress, you know, maybe even in the history of the country. They're not really passing much legislation given a variety of issues. It really still is all about the states making progress. And regardless of the political makeup of certain states, I still think there's opportunities at the state level to make progress on climate change.
What are the most promising strategies currently being pursued by states to address global warming?
The Northeast states are certainly doing a lot with the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, REGGI, which is essentially just a carbon trading program, but it's really provided a lot of revenue, and it's been very good for those states. You know, that's something California obviously has their own program of that nature. They're looking at trying to expand that and partnering with Oregon and Washington, for example, on that, which I think would be very positive. I think, you know, state renewable electricity standards are absolutely vital, and they've played as much of a role as anything else in the increase in renewable energy that we've seen from the states. Also, state tax incentives and other state policy incentives that encourage more of those renewables is also important. All of those different policies are helpful, and there are things that the states are already doing and that states that aren't currently doing can adopt to really make progress. But I think beyond just the reduction of emissions and deploying more clean energy, there's a lot of climate impact or climate damage that's already baked in, quite frankly. We're fighting for the future beyond that and what that looks like. So with respect to what's baked in over the next 50 years from the key trapping gases that are already in our atmosphere, we really need to do our best to lay out some smart plans for how we're going to reduce our vulnerability to these impacts. And at the state level, each state has unique challenges with respect to that, and each state is likely facing some constraints with respect to resources. So, you know, state plans for adaptation and climate resilience and preparedness are very important, and it's even more important that the states really call on the federal government to help provide resources, leadership, and smart policies so that they can reduce their vulnerabilities to these climate impacts.
To what extent are rollbacks of climate change policies at the state level of concern following the midterm elections?
It's a huge concern. We've definitely seen attacks against the renewable electricity standards in various states, largely from well-funded business groups that have financial stake in fossil energy. These battles have actually been taking place, you know, before the midterm elections, and they'll take place after those elections. I just say, though, that to the extent that the elections have put more conservative or anti-environmental representation in state legislatures. Obviously, those in-state battles to preserve existing renewable energy authorities or incentives or stay in, for example, regional greenhouse gas initiatives, those take a really big hit because, you know, again, those decisions are made at the state level, and the representation at the state level with respect to the 2014 midterms is largely growing more conservative. I think our job is to really depoliticize this issue. Climate change can't be an issue that we only make progress in when Democrats have control of state legislatures or the federal government. It's a science issue, and it's a moral issue, and we absolutely have to find a way to continue to make progress at the state and federal level, even in conservative political environments. And that's why I think focusing on climate impacts and preparedness and really getting us to a conversation about revenue and what that looks like, I think that's the way that we can continue to make progress.
Would you speak about the Union of Concerned Scientists Leadership States Initiative?
Absolutely. So we are very focused on, of course, maximizing the amount of renewables that states use to comply with the EPA carbon standards. We are very concerned, for example, about over-reliance on natural gas, which the standards in and of themselves, if you're just shifting to what's cheaper, there'll be a lot of incentive just to shift to, for example, natural gas. But, you know, of course, the more reliant we are on one type of energy source, regardless of its environmental implications, you know, you have certain price volatility that can really affect consumers. So the best situation is really a diverse energy portfolio that really is heavily weighted, has a heavy, robust concentration of renewables and energy efficiency in addition to other sources. We're really dedicated to working at the state level with states, at state decision makers, to, you know, help do some analysis that can help inform their decision making with respect to that. So modeling, things of that nature that will help show them about the economic benefits of complying using a heavy footprint of renewables and efficiency. And we think there's states that are already doing this, as we've seen on the East and West Coast. We'd like to see more states in the Midwest and the Rockies and even the Southeast start doing this. And I think with respect to the Leadership States Initiative, we've chosen 12 states that we really feel we can work with decision makers and folks in those states to maximize the amount of renewables that they're using in those states to comply with the regs, and then also to kind of put forward a vision for how they can improve their climate resilience as a state and their planning to safeguard against climate impacts. And if enough of those states are actually moving forward, it really doesn't matter what the federal government does or what the rest of the country does. Eventually, people are just going to have to follow and they're going to have to catch up. And that's our hope. Our hope is that we can get enough states that are really showing the kind of leadership on climate because it makes good sense for their state, that eventually the rest of the country will follow, and the conversation about the federal government leading will largely be an afterthought because the states are really moving ahead on their own.
Which are the specific states you're focusing on?
We are focused on Virginia, we're focused on Florida, New Jersey, we're focused on New Mexico and Colorado and Pennsylvania and Missouri. We think there's some opportunities in Washington and Oregon with respect to regional greenhouse gas initiatives. So those are a few, for example.
Is California included as well?
UCS actually has an office in California. We have a great California team that works on a lot of state California issues, so we are working in California as well.
Overall, where are the best opportunities for progress in climate change in government?
I still honestly think that the best opportunities right now in this post-midterm environment are at the state level. I think there are some opportunities at the federal level, but they're less ambitious in scope. And I think if you're looking for bang for your buck, I think energy efficiency opportunities at the state level are enormous. I think renewable energy opportunities at the state level are enormous. And I think there's a lot of opportunities for being able to be more resilient at the state level by making smart decisions with respect to infrastructure and planning and pre-disaster mitigations. So I think those are really where the opportunities are right now.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Don't give up on Congress. It's a very challenging political environment, but, you know, Congress is a reactionary body, and if they hear it from the states and they hear it from their constituents, sooner or later they'll be forced to go about the business of governing. And it's really more important now than ever that you make your voice heard, make sure that your representatives in Congress are aware of your feelings about the issue of climate change and the need for Congress to act. We've got to keep the pressure on these guys.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You were just listening to Robert Cohen, Director of Government Affairs for the Union of Concerned Scientists Climate and Energy Program. For more information, check on the web at ucsusa.org. Again, that's ucsusa.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the Streaming Archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on Listener Powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.